Hello and welcome to the Guardian Film Show. This week, as ever, we're looking at the stars and reaching for the heavens. But it's dark inside the cinema, and Houston just won't copy. It could be a bumpy ride. Orbiting the sofa on this week's show, Alec Baldwin and James Toback find themselves seduced and abandoned on a busman's holiday to Cannes. David France salutes the direct action group ACT UP in his AIDS documentary How to Survive a Plague. And it's short, it's sweet, it's the short film Heat. First up, it's Gravity, Alfonso Cuarón's 3D drama about two astronauts lost in space. Fortunately, help is at hand. The Guardian's gallant Andrew Pulver rode into town to throw a lifeline to the film star Sandra Bullock.
Mission abort. Repeat. Mission abort.
Explorer, this is Kowalski confirming visual contact with debris. Debris is from a BSE sat.
Petra.
Repeat, I have a record.
Dr. Stone requesting faster transport.
We have to go.
Kennedy reports meteorological conditions. Go.
Houston, Explorer, copy.
Explorer, Dr. Stone requesting faster transport to Bay Area. Explorer, do you copy?
Explorer, permission to retrieve Dr. Stone.
Here, go, Kowalski. Houston, this is Explorer, copy.
All right.
We've lost Houston.
Look, we need to get the hell out of here. Need some help there, man. No, don't wait for us.
Quite a lot of religious sort of critics saying, you know, this is about the sort of arc of Christianity and, you know, Jesus. This sort of thing. Yeah. I mean, I know it's quite heavy stuff. Bloody, I didn't really want to get into really heavy stuff. But I just thought, you know, it's, I suppose it's like contacting the infinite, contemplating your own demise, death, I mean, and all that kind of stuff.
I mean, so. Contemplating your own demise, contemplating your life, contemplating your loss, figuring out, or a character figuring out, a reason why she should try to live, or try to at least attempt to save her own life when the last thing she wants to do is live on Earth because of a loss. I mean, I think all of those pieces lead you to faith. You know, whatever your faith is, you know, it doesn't have to be in a religious context. It's human faith. What is it that humans inherently have, so many have, that allow them to dig deeper through adversity and somehow stand up and try? You know, you go, why? If you really have nothing to live for, why do they always seem to find that thing? Some base it on their religious faith. Some people base it on their spiritual faith. Some people have just that will, and some people can't find that thing. And here we meet a character who has not found that thing. And she even says, "I don't know how to pray. Never done it in my life. Nobody taught me, so I don't know." You know, and when people, I've heard, when you get to that experience in life, you pray.
Joining me back on planet Earth is The Guardian film critic Peter Bradshaw and films editor Catherine Short. Peter, how was your incipient heart condition after watching this film?
It was very, very high. I mean, I thought it was fantastic. It really is exciting, this film. I've watched it twice now. I think I might go and see it again. It has a real sense of event. It's a real event, this film. It's very simple, and on paper, it must have looked almost absurdly kind of blank in a way.
It's just, like a kind of five-page script.
Yes, it must have looked like something for a short film in a way, because it doesn't have any real kind of twists and turns and ideas, really. It's just, it must have just been on the back of a cigarette packet, really. And yet it's visually just amazing. Mm. I mean, it really is amazing. The 3D is sort of fantastic. Yeah. The effects are fantastic. And yet you can't really pin it down, because I seem to have seen loads and loads and loads of science fiction films which have planet Earth or the planet looming in one quadrant of the screen and spacemen and spacewomen coming up in the foreground. And yet it seems to have made it new, made it really as fresh as a daisy.
Yeah. And terrifying as
well. Yeah, and really, because it's part of my sort of theory about this film is that it's very unusual and novel because it's not science fiction. Most films set in space are fiction in that they're set in an imagined future. Mm. This one isn't really science fiction. It's, even though the science, in fact, has been revealed to be fiction, sadly, but it's set in the here and now. Mm. It's more like a space thriller. It's set in what we can take to be something that could actually happen.
Mm. Catherine, what did you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's completely gripping. I knew what happened. I knew the sort of twists in advance. And yet still, I was on the edge of my seat in a way that I haven't been for years watching this. It was just exhausting and terrifying. And, you know, you gasp, you know, you physically gasp. Mm. I mean, if I had any problems with it, I suppose the dialogue feels a bit off at certain points. And it reminded me of Diana in that... sorry. In that one of the scenes in Diana where she's about to die, and you know she's about to die, they amp up the dramatic tension yet further by having this possibility of if she answered this phone call, maybe she wouldn't have died and all that. And here you've got Sandra Bullock in intense peril. Mm. And they amp it up yet further with a backstory about various sort of tragedies. And I just don't feel you need that. I just, you know, it would have purer.
Mm.
But it is five-star fantastic.
It's been a huge hit in America, and it's being read variously as a kind of religious parable or even a kind of, you know, feminist allegory with kind of, you know, her as woman, hear her roar. Yeah. Did you get any of that from it?
Yeah, I mean, she barks, doesn't she?
She does, yeah.
Maybe it's a less flattering film. I don't know, I didn't... I mean, what did you think? Did you think it was a Christian... I sort of thought you could probably...
There is one explicitly Christian moment in it where he looks at the Russian icon in the Russian craft of St. Christopher. And that is shown quite discreetly in one shot, and then there's a close-up of it. Mm. But I personally think, on the whole, that sort of denotes the Russian-ness. Yeah. This very bizarre Russian-ness, and then the equally kind of surreal Chinese-ness of what happened.
There's a Buddha, isn't
but
there?
But yes, exactly. So I think there is an element of religiousness in a way, but it's so downbeat and so kind of subtle. I didn't find myself taking offence at it or thinking that this was propaganda in any way.
There's also kind of almost a kind of implicit ecological message in there too, isn't there? I mean, the sense that the orbit of Earth is just a kind of dumping ground, and it's just this kind of spinning rubbish that we're actually polluting outer space as well as
in
our
a way
planet.
It's almost impossible to look at. I mean, environmentalists have said that one of the great leaps forward for ecology in the last 20 or 30 years is simply the image of Earth entire of itself, intact, seen from space. And you can see at once, paradoxically, how awe-inspiring it is and yet how fragile it appears to be. And in a way, simply by reproducing that icon, that seems to make an environmental point by itself.
Catherine, we're kind of tilting towards the end of the year where we start doing our year-end roundups. Would this be one of the films of the year for you?
Yeah, it's incredibly strong. It's an incredibly strong year. And this is sort of stands alone, aside from the other kind of real-life Oscar contenders. And it makes them all kind of seem petty and parochial. I mean, they're not, you know, slave. It's not. It's not petty and parochial. But, you know, it does sort of, it kind of kicks them into shape in a funny kind of way, because it's, you know, that's that awful word, game-changing. It really is. And it's not just technically game-changing. It's sort of awe-inspiring. It's purity of story is game-changing as well, I think.
Sandra Bullock and George Clooney go weightless in the brilliant Gravity. And now I think it's time for a palate cleanser. Way back in the summer, Guardian Witness asked readers to submit a one-minute short film on the subject of heat. And now, on this sweltering day in November, we finally have a winner. The title is Heat. The winner is filmmaker Finn McMoran. And I think that makes this the premiere. congratulations to Finn McMoran. I hope she's blushing. And now back to the tawdry, grubby business of mainstream film production. James Toback and Alec Baldwin are going to Cannes. They've got a head full of dreams and a hat full of schemes. And Peter and Catherine were lying in wait.
When I was around in the old days, there were some people at the top who supported the
John
voice.
John Calley.
John Calley. A number of people. But they're, I don't feel that those in power, not that they're bad, they come from a different time and place.
Absolutely. To go and make great films with great people is still, I say this in the beginning of the film, is still the ultimate. But those, it's like musical chairs. And here's the table, surrounded by chairs, and they've taken away more chairs and more chairs. And more. But the number of people circling the table trying to sit down when the music stops is the same. I had to make a lot of films when I was younger. And now my agents will call me and say, I got a phone call from, he'll name some famous director. And I'll get very excited. I'll become so happy. And I'll say, what did he say? He said, only five other guys have to die and you can have this part. If these five guys die, you're in the movie. And I go, oh my God, thank you. We've lowered our expectations so low.
Cinema is bigger than all of this other stuff. Cinema truly is an art form given to us by the gods.
What is a movie now? Is it on your iPad? Is it on your watch? Is it on cable? It's only incidentally in a theater. And
it's
often...
It's Lorne Michaels' joke about the generation of his children. Lorne said that two kids are looking at an iPhone. And the one kid saying to the other, what are you watching? And the other kid says, Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah. What's filmmaking like for you now?
Well, I would say it's easier and easier, you know, to make it. What's always difficult is to get the financement for it.
Television, in particular cable television, is the bastion of great acting now. You go to television to see, this is why you have this surge, this is why you have this riotous kind of celebration of Mad Men, Breaking Bad, Homeland, all these really seminal dramas on TV, because the motion picture business is, not completely, but more and more and more, they are abandoning serious acting to television.
Catherine, is this the Cannes that you recognise from your trips there?
No, not much. No, it's slightly higher end. No, it's a good film. It's definitely a good film. And there's lots of interesting stuff in there. You know, the Ryan Gosling stuff is amazing. Mm. There's some great quotes. In general, it's quite an outrageous vanity project, buddy movie, sort of loving backslap thing, really.
Sounds like Cannes.
Yeah. it's got that kind of... That documentary you had last week about John Milius, it's a bit like that. You've got sort of massive... chest smacking, back slapping kind of macho cigars, girls stuff going on. And it sort of reeks of that. It's also massively overproduced. It's one of those ones that they can't show you a photo without the photo kind of warping and changing, even though you've got great people like Polanski doing quotes too. And sort of there's lots of split screen, which got on my nerves a bit. It's full of interesting stuff, but you have to kind of gulp to take it in, I felt.
Is it a thesis on the film industry, or is it an excuse for them to kind of buddy up and swagger around?
Well, it's the latter disguised as the former, isn't it? I mean, pretty blatantly. It's very thin, the thesis.
Peter, what is the thesis?
The thesis is notionally that they are going to bring a fly-on-the-wall camera with them around the 2012 Cannes Film Festival while they tour around talking to the money men, the serious billionaires, who may wish to put the money up for their film, this idea for a film called Last Tango in Tikrit, which is a kind of variation on the Bertolucci theme, which will star Alec Baldwin as some sort of Goldwater Republican guy who's come back from Iraq. He's a politico of some sort, and now he's trying to get rid of all his angst and rage by seducing a younger woman in, like, as it were, Last Tango in Paris. But obviously, nobody has any serious intention of making this film. It's just an excuse for them to tour around, shooting the breeze, slapping each other on the back, but talking, I think, very interestingly and sometimes quite revealingly about how scared they are of failing and how scared they are of dying. You see, what I find really interesting...
He keeps asking everybody, are you ready for death?
Are you ready for death? And that is a brilliant scene. It's so unexpected.
I'm not sure I've ever asked anyone.
No, I know. It's terrifying. And some of the people who he asks who asked this question, like Jeff Katzenberg or I think it's Diane Kruger, they are astonished, genuinely astonished, not merely at the lapse of taste involved in asking this, but you can see that's probably the first time in their lives they really have asked themselves this question. And there is a kind of fascinating woundedness, especially in Alec Baldwin, who I think is great. He's this terrifically funny, witty, charismatic guy who is genuinely yearning to get back into the movies. Both men, I think, they're in their... Well, Baldwin, I think, is in his 50s. Toback, I think, is older than that. He's in his 60s. And they think, well, they think what the rest of us think. There are so many terrible movies being made. So many terrible movies. They've all got money. They've raised money from Russian billionaires or whoever the hell it is. Why can't we make a movie which will be really good?
Catherine, if one of the selling points is the access to the kind of the top brass over in Cannes, who comes out of it well and who doesn't?
I think Gosling comes out of it well. Yeah. You know, I've interviewed him a few times, and he's actually these are amazing quotes from Gosling.
Yeah.
He's very, very, very on message. But these quotes are off message and give an insight into acting and what that means. That's funny and really insightful and really, really interesting. I think the thing about it is that I wanted it to be more Larry Sanders. Mm. You know, I wanted Alec Baldwin's inner Hank or inner Larry to be more exposed. And, you know, they're talking all the time about how you can either make a movie that's like a $3 million movie or a kind of $100 million movie. And the in-between is now difficult. Well, we know that. You know, that's like, yeah.
That's what everybody says, isn't it? Everybody says that. Everybody's used to hearing that. It's the kind of... Route one stalling tactic is for somebody to say, well, I can either do it very cheaply, or it's actually easier to raise $200 million. It's pure bullshit.
But in a way, this film falls into that, you know, it tries to be something in the middle. You know, I wanted it to either be kind of grungy and sad about Alec Baldwin, or to be genuinely kind of, you know, like a high-end documentary. And it's sort of
we've gone to the Vanity Fair party.
I
liked it that it did. Fall between those two stools. I quite liked it that it did that because it was sort of not in control of itself. I think that it serendipitously chanced across these really great interviews. Interesting. Francis Ford Coppola, I thought, was interesting, how wounded he is about the business. What I thought is interesting is how very, very guarded young women are with these guys. I mean, Jessica Chastain.
You think there might be a reason for that?
Well, exactly. I mean, they really are. They just don't want to give anything away.
No,
so Ryan Gosling, in a way, was so... As Catherine said, he responded to the very stifling, cigar-smoky alpha maleness, and he opened up and gave these great quotes of really interesting stuff, whereas Diane Kruger and Jessica Chastain were very polite, but very sort of... I mean, Diane Kruger didn't even give them the time of day, didn't even say, yeah, that sounds interesting. She said, I'm not sure that it is. but she was locked out of the buddy comedy, clearly. Mm. They both were. They're locked out of it, and that's... I find that either that is quite interesting, to be quite honest with you, although it is, again, another unintentional product.
When I make a movie, all I think is, what's the profit?
I had finished two Godfather films, won a ton of Oscars, six of them, and I threw them out the window. And my mother went, you shouldn't do that.
Every film is like a masterclass.
I always loved movies. My mother wanted to punish me, she'd take them away from me. Sometimes I put them down the front of my pants because I like the way they sound.
Among all arts, film is the most important.
You have to fight very, very, very hard to do what you want because it always comes down to the money.
The fickle mistress that is cinema in Seduced and Abandoned. And our advice, obviously, is don't get involved. Bringing this week's show to a close is a very different kind of documentary, one in which the stakes are just that little bit higher. It's the AIDS documentary, How to Survive a Plague.
AIDS is now the leading cause of death.
Demonstrators blocked access to buildings.
Coalition of gay groups came to shut down the FDA.
This government has the resources to deal with the AIDS epidemic, and they won't do it unless we force them.
In the late 1980s, AIDS was nearly 100% fatal. Ignorance was rife, and hospitals dumped the corpses inside black bin bags. David France's impassioned film pays tribute to the grassroots activists of the ACT UP movement, who took on an indifferent political establishment and pushed the crisis before the eyes of the world.
There was nothing coming out of our government's efforts.
But no, they march in the streets. They defy you.
I decided to become a full-time AIDS activist.
Peter, this is powerful stuff. I mean, it's at once a kind of celebration of the heroism of the activist, but also a really kind of shocking indictment of the ignorance and bigotry that was rife at the time.
Yes, it's easy to forget about it now. It's easy to forget about it now, but in the early 80s, when the true extent and horror of the AIDS epidemic was coming to be felt, there were quite substantial forces in the Washington political establishment, not merely Senator Jesse Helms and other people who just thought, well, so what? AIDS, is these gays have brought it on themselves, and if this is a kind of market correction, a plague which thins them out, who cares? Yeah.
And frankly, President Bush's advice is just change your behaviour.
Just change your behaviour. And Ronald Reagan didn't even get to that level. I think he, like, as it were, Queen Victoria refusing to acknowledge the existence of lesbians, I think Ronald Reagan just refused to even acknowledge that it was going on in the first place. This is a movie about what Andrew Sullivan, the conservative commentator, calls paradoxically the great era of gay politics, a tragic era, but one which paradoxically radicalized and galvanized generations of gay men in the United States and around the world, and showed them that they could act in concert and achieve a very great deal because of their anger and their rage and a kind of boiling internal energy. And they showed what grassroots activism really could achieve. And it, frankly, if it wasn't for them pushing from below, it's arguable that the treatments now for HIV, which have made such enormous strides towards the late 90s, these might have not arisen, or that the condition might have been considered like cancer, something that we just have to contain, or might have just a cure or even a treatment might just recede infinitely over the horizon.
Catherine, how familiar with this story were you before seeing this film?
Seeing the film made me realise how ignorant I was. I think somebody, perhaps my generation, that you were a child when, in the 80s and early 90s, you know, you didn't watch that kind of news report. It was absolutely fascinating. You know, you think of the sort of Amphar galas that one sees now and how much it's changed.
And now that seems really cheesy. And yet you think, thank God. Yeah. Thank God we got to the point where we can see the Amphar gala as some sort of cheesy celebrity circus. Mm.
No, that's right. And it was really good to see a documentary that, you know, informs, is angry, is fascinating. Now, this has incredible footage. It's proper documentary, this, unlike quite a lot of documentaries nowadays. And as Peter says, incredibly timely. You've got Dallas Buyers Club, and one of the big films from last week is spoiler alert, very involved with this. Absolutely brilliant film.
They all had to become scientists to some degree.
We can take a drug, your test tube, to the market in under 2 years. This total reluctance on your part is going to get you nowhere. It'll end up killing us.
The death rate just kept on climbing.
It became very clear that you weren't going to mess with these people.
I am going to fight them. My patients are going to fight them. And you're not damn welcome.
We need our government to save our lives.
The impassioned How to Survive a Plague there, and if there's not a happy ending, there's at least a hopeful one. And that's it from us. We're out of the darkness. The lights are going back on. My thanks as ever to Catherine Short and Peter Bradshaw, and to you for watching. We'll be back next week.